Welcome to Flashpoint, the podcast for filthy casuals by filthy casuals.
Hi everyone and welcome to Flashpoint episode 82, recorded Sunday, July 20th. I'm your host David Holloway and with me is a co-host who has been officially appointed Harrison Ford's orthopaedic advisor. How are you going, Simon?
I thought I'd been appointed his leg stuntman.
Well, a bit of both. That'd be best of both worlds.
It would, because I've got sexy legs.
So I've heard. Yes. So this week, we'll be having a bit of a look, as always, at Star Wars The Old Republic. We're going to look a bit at the Destiny Beta, a bit of Weird Al Yankovic, and a whole bunch more. And probably before we move on to the first segment, just wanted to thank everyone for the very positive feedback we received for the revamp format last fortnight. So we didn't receive any negative feedback, and that's just because probably we made people not angry enough to bother giving us feedback.
Do you reckon that sounds right? Yeah.
And those lovely people that did give positive feedback, we appreciate. And remind me, Simon, we've got to do shout outs for some great people that gave iTunes reviews that I always forget to mention. So I'll do that later.
You're asking me to remember to remind you.
Yeah, and then
that's doomed to failure.
I know, and I'll load iTunes live and then bring the Skype feed down and it'll be all good.
Excellent.
So let's jump, as always, for the second time, into our MMO news section, Republic News.
You're not afraid? You will be.
You will be.
So on the Star Wars The Old Republic front, the most notable piece of news over the last fortnight is that they ran a live stream showing off the strongholds that are incoming in what? Be under a month now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Simon, you had the opportunity to check it out?
Yes, that's one of the good things about our wonderful electronic age is you can actually wake yourself up at 6 o'clock. Turn on your tablet and watch the live stream from there, only to find out that it's actually starting at 7 o'clock. But that wasn't my fault. They just posted the wrong GMT time because there was a bunch of people in chat just going, shouldn't it have started by now?
Yeah.
But anyway, it did start and it was well worth waiting for because one of our good friends, well, at least acquaintances, or at least someone we like. Let's just go with that. Someone we like. Probably doesn't know we exist. Chill from the Utini cast was on with Musco and I've forgotten the other fellow's name. Terrible. But he's the lead designer. He's been there for years now. And I've forgotten his name. Anyway, I think it was the day before Musco and I think, was it Courtney, were on doing a live stream and just showing how not to decorate, basically, was the upshot of that. But she was brought in to do a little bit of a Better Homes and Gardens, just show how it can be done. And it's really good. Have you seen any of it?
No, I haven't. I'm just impressed that he's got a decorator in him.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't think it'd be anyone's surprise. But it was good just seeing the system in action. It's, as most of you probably know by now, it is a hook-based system, but it's not anywhere near as limited as many other games where basically you've got set locations where you can put stuff, certain types of stuff, and that's really it. One of the cool things about what SWTOR have done is the hook-based system, you can actually cycle each area of the wall or the ceiling. They have defined layouts, but you can actually cycle through different layouts for that particular block. So you've got an option of putting big things, one big thing down and moving it left to right, back and front within that defined area. So you don't have to place it exactly where they tell you. You've got a little bit of flexibility there. So that's good. Or you can switch it out to smaller things or even smaller things. So you've got a fair bit of variety. You can put things on the ceiling, put things on the wall, obviously. You can put rugs down. So there is definitely potential here. And one of the interesting things, well, interested me anyway, was that we actually got to see the Cass City apartment finally.
Okay.
And it's raining. It looks like it's perpetually raining, so probably no barbecues. But they've done a very nice job with it. It's obviously it's all greys because it's imperial. There's a very large balcony where you can
throw people off.
Oh, I don't know, actually. Probably.
That would fit.
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think that you could force push someone off.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry, that just distracted me with happy thoughts of doing that. The vista that they have obviously had to build from scratch because really there wasn't, as we've discussed before, there isn't one in Cass City because it's just a local repertory society set more than anything else. It looks good. It does look good. I was quite impressed. You get the occasional ship flying past, so there's a hint of life. It was still a dev build, so there were no functioning doors, but apparently they're going to open left, right, up, down. So they're going to be in four quadrants. Well, that's redundant. Yep. A quadrant would have to be, there would have to be four of them. There is a garage, which is very spacious. Corridors, stairways. It's a good space. And of course, if you subscribed all the way through, then you're going to get the five rooms. Now, I'm not sure how many are actually going to be in the DK apartment. I know that Tatooine and the Nar Shaddaa one are going to have 12 rooms total. And we get five free. Or if you subscribed, I think it was up until the 15th, you get three.
Yeah.
So there's still going to be plenty of rooms for you to buy. And they've stolen a nice little trick from PlayStation Home, where you could, they brought in some years ago, where you could actually buy apartments and then buy additional rooms for more money. But they had a wonderful feature where you could basically go and press your nose up against the glass doors so you could see what you could have for yourself. Okay. If only you were willing to just part with, you know, a little insignificant bit of cash. You know, it's nothing much, nothing to worry about. No, cartel coins.
Because that was my obvious question, is that you can buy it, sorry, not in cartel coins. Are you able to buy it, I assume, not with credits either?
You can. You will be able to buy it with credits.
Okay.
Or you will be able to buy with cartel coins.
Okay, good.
So it depends. As was pointed out, I'm sorry, I can't remember who by, there are some players kicking around with an inordinate amount of money.
Mm.
I mean, millions. And that's not good for the economy. If you've got people who've got more money than, well, things to spend it on, basically, you'll end up with people paying way too much for stuff, which drives the price up out of reach of people who don't have that much.
Yes.
So you need cash sinks, and this is going to be a big cash sink.
Good.
And that's a good thing for the economy. It's good for everybody. And, okay, maybe you won't be able to afford all the rooms you want as soon as you want them. Well, hey, that's life. Get over it. I have to admit, though, as flexible as I thought the hook system was, and it's good. I don't really have any complaints about it at all. The one complaint I do have, no, I've just contradicted myself, haven't I? I have no complaints about the hook system. I do have a complaint about the decorating, and that is it's fine having that, and the reason they have that, and they've said this, is because most people couldn't decorate to save their life. Okay, no. I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically it. And that makes sense. But in all honesty, there's a lot of professional people in the real world that can't decorate either.
Exactly.
Bearing in mind, obviously acknowledging the trauma and the loss of life, the loss of the Costa Concordia itself wasn't actually that big a bad thing to happen. If you've ever looked at any of the photos in there at the interior decoration, those sort of decors can actually only be improved by tipping them 90 degrees and filling them half full of water. It's the kind of technicolor,
belch. Instead of a technicolor yawn, a technicolor belch.
It's the kind of blindingly horrific interior decorating that you need to take LSD in order to tone it down. It's just horrific. So, yeah. Okay, BioWare, that's fine. Help people. But it'd be really cool if you could just toggle that off. So you could have the hook system, and if you toggle it off, you could have a freeform system. Now, granted, you're going to get some absolute horrors.
Yeah, yeah.
With people being able to, you know, make
put an orange rug on the wall instead of on the floor, or yeah, whatever.
I was just trying to think of maybe. I mean, it would be nice if I had the ability to make a giant head of George Lucas out of Ewoks. That'd be kind of neat. And yes, you will get atrocities, but you also get some really cool stuff. And that's one of the things that if you've ever played Gary's mod, you'll see how creative people can be with a fixed set of resources. Or if you've seen Wildstar, then yeah, some amazing things being done there. Some absolute monstrosities have been created in there, but some really clever, creative people have done some quite startling things with things you don't expect. And that's one of the good things about a freeform system, is you get that sort of expression, you get that kind of innovation. So it's a little sad that we're not going to see any of that, but for what it is, the hook system I think is going to work really well and satisfy most people.
And do you have to pay for the hooks, or do you have to pay cartel coins? And how do you nail them up?
No, the hooks are predefined within each room.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, right. Sorry.
That's all right.
That was a joke.
It's just because I was going to ask you about Car City, about whether you can still see the circa 1990 cranes on the skyline. You know,
yes. No, I didn't notice it.
Good. It's a positive.
There weren't a lot of lingering looks out the window because everyone was very keen to sort of pop from one thing to another and show you this thing and that thing.
And it was raining.
And it was raining, yes.
So
I have to admit, early on, I was thinking, oh, they haven't even bothered doing an exterior. It's just a silhouette against the sky.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case. There is actually an exterior. I thought they'd done a low, dirty, cheaty cop-out. But no, they didn't. They've done it properly. And they've done themselves proud, I think.
Good. There you go. So that was a live stream. And the other bit of news that we stumbled across, or you stumbled across, Simon, was Legacy Storage. So we've had confirmation from BioWare that the Legacy Storage that's coming won't allow storage of bind-on pickup items.
Yeah. Which is going to disappoint some people because, let's face it, most of us have got storage problems.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a surprising announcement in that, and please, we'd love to hear, I'm sure there are MMOs out there that do allow, but I know, unless I've missed something, WoW, you still can't mail bind-on pickup items to your other characters and so on. So it doesn't particularly surprise me.
Yeah, and I suppose when you get right down to it, that's what the bind in bind on pickup means, is it's bound to you.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise everyone's just, you know, their best character, they're running operations to feed gear to the others, and it sort of doesn't, it's not in the spirit of the game, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, there do have to be some limitations.
Yeah.
If there's no limitations, then there's no challenge.
Exactly.
I mean, this would be a really handy convenience. It would be nice if you could put things in, have additional storage, because legacy storage isn't going to provide us with really any additional storage for any important things that we might want to hang on to. It would be good to have a little bit more, especially if you've already bought all the tabs for your cargo hold, and you've still got there's stuff there that you've got. Well, dyes are a good example. You can't pull dyes out of things.
No.
So if you bought the black on black or the black on white, or, you know, one of the ones that comes up very rarely, you're not going to want to get rid of that bit of gear. You might not want to wear it, but, you know, you wouldn't want to throw it out either.
No, exactly.
Because that costs money.
Hmm.
But you don't want the thing dragging around behind you like a dead dog either. And that's unfortunately the seems to be the problem. You can put mats in there, so that will free up a little bit of space. Yeah. So that's something. It's a common pool for everybody. So yeah, that's a plus.
Yeah, actually, that is a plus because that's I know my, all the MMOs I play. It's the mats that tend to just clog you up badly.
Oh, they do. They're shocking.
So agreed. So speaking of legacy storage and obviously the live stream talking about strongholds is that you needed to have subscribed by July 15th and I had an inadvertent close call with that in that unbeknownst to me, my credit card expired a few months back and I thought I'd updated all my MMOs with it but obviously hadn't done it for Star Wars The Old Republic and it appears there's no notification system of that. So I know with WoW, and I'm pretty sure there's a thing, hey, your credit card's expired or whatever, there was nothing. And funnily enough, it expired, my subscription expired on, I think it was the 10th or 11th of July. So I logged in on the 11th or 12th of July and had the nice splash screen come up saying, you have just been moved to preferred status. And I'm going, what? And then, of course, logged into my account, realized the old credit card was there. Tried to update it in the system, didn't work, and ended up having to call the friendly BioWare call center in Ireland and was shepherded through that and it's all sorted. Although, as an interesting thing, the call center agent, to be polite as they do, said, oh, so where are you and what are you, you know? And I said, oh, well, I'm in Australia and so on. And I said, oh, you're based in Ireland, aren't you? And he clammed right up and said, oh, I'm sorry, but we're not allowed as per a policy to let you know where our location is.
Right.
So it's like, well, don't ask me where I live and then get it. He wasn't annoyed. He was very professional, but, you know, and then clam up when I ask you where you are. It's quite an interesting policy.
It is. But at least you weren't having to call Comcast.
No. Apparently there's – I haven't actually heard the call yet. I've been a bit slack, but I know there is already – is it a rap or there's a tune that's come out that's gone viral with the Comcast chat in it.
Oh, I wouldn't be at all surprised. Yeah. I actually feel a bit sorry for the rep.
Yeah. So explain it for those that haven't heard it, or do you think everyone, all of our millions of listeners will have already heard it?
I think anyone that's listening to this podcast is probably already well aware of it, just in case you're not. It was actually someone of note, but I can't actually recall off the top of my head who it was. Recorded the last 8 minutes of a call to Comcast customer service trying to get his internet connection cut off because they were moving house. And obviously, you don't want the internet still running in your old house when you're not there. And he was treated to a rather protracted and, well, I would say bordering on desperate attempt by the rep to try and convince him not to, or at least to stall him, or at least not have him action the cancellation of service. I think he actually tried to steer the guy in the direction of going into a store to do it. And, yeah, extremely uncomfortable experience for the gentleman who was trying to cancel his service. But the thing you have to bear in mind with any of these sorts of things, especially companies like as evil and black-hearted as Comcast or Time Warner, because they're really much the same. They're just bastard monopolies. Mm. I mean, yes, there's two of them, but their markets don't overlap. They're monopolies they've basically carved the country up. That's a cartel as far as I'm concerned, and that's generally not regarded as a good thing. But these black-hearted mofos give their customer service people targets, so they're not allowed to how can I put this?
Well, they're probably penalized for losing customers.
Yeah, they're basically, they have thresholds. They can't lose more than a certain percentage of something within a specific time period, or they will be penalized. It'll either be some sort of demerit or black point, or they'll lose part of their pay will be lost because they'll won't get a bonus or something. And let's face it, most people, when they get a bonus on a regular basis, tend to regard that as part of their pay.
That's right.
So when you lose that bonus, it effectively becomes a pay cut. And I'm sure they're not paid particularly well in the first place. Now, Comcast came out and said that they're terribly embarrassed by this, blah, 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 blah. But it's been made quite clear by other people contributing to the discussion that they've had calls like this as well, and it actually seems to be company policy. They've just been caught out. It's just been dragged out into the bright light of day, and their vileness has been highlighted for all to see.
Hmm. Speaking of which, we haven't got our bonuses for a while from the other podcasts for making them look good. Must chase that up.
Yes, you should.
I mean, there's not as many, the bonus isn't as big because there aren't as many podcasts around anymore, but must chase that up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the one area where we look a little better is we don't have anywhere near as much dead air as Torocast.
See, I don't understand that context. Why?
That's okay. Anyone who listened to last week's Torocast knows exactly what I mean.
Oh, it was a big bit of dead air in there.
There's some protracted pauses.
Okay. Because don't put it past me to accidentally leave a half hour dead air in the middle of a podcast one day.
And see who noticed.
that could be interesting.
Yeah, that could work. But, I mean, the thing about dead air is generally if your editor's not, let's just say, concerned with doing more interesting things, would edit out the dead air rather than leave the dead air in and then actually highlight it.
Excellent.
With great panache and style, I should add.
That's cutting edge podcasting.
It is cutting edge podcast. Oh, I can't even talk anymore. Why do we do this on a Sunday night? God damn it.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's because, anyway. If you tried it on a work night, it'd be even worse.
It would.
And then the two last MMO related things before we move on to the next bit is Firefall is now at a beta and in early access.
Yes, Firefall. That MMO that you probably forgot existed.
I did. I know. Yeah. I know you've liked it.
Yeah, I've liked it, but I haven't been in there for months.
And is that
months.
The one that had the crossover TV show?
No, that's Defiance.
Oh, okay.
Defiance is also back on air, if anyone's interested. Episode 5 screened last week, and I'm enjoying it. I actually didn't get around to watching the series until 2 weeks ago, so I just watched season 1 all the way through, and I thought, oh, this is a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
So Defiance. It's actually reignited my interest in playing Defiance again, but unfortunately that's a bit awkward at the moment because the other things, which we'll discuss shortly, have cropped up.
Yes, particularly our low bonus payments. And then I was going to mention, just because I've been playing more as much WoW as SWTOR the last couple of weeks, and I've been doing the sad thing of running around achievement hunting mostly through archaeology. Which it doesn't get much sadder than that in WoW than doing archaeology in WoW, but that's what I've been doing.
It's a very zen experience, I find.
It is. It's a good thing you can watch TV or do something else, and it's all about the achievements. That's sort of the end of MMO, but we're really pleased, and I know we had a couple of people ask over the last fortnight when we'd see the return of ODS1. To a segment, and he's back this week. Obviously, he's now featuring in each of our tags, which has been popular, but ODS1 is back with Your Lore is Stuck in My Canon, and he's going to talk about Manan. Over to you.
Thank you, Master David. May I be the first to welcome you back from your short hiatus. Such a very, very, very short hiatus. Today I am going to share with you some of the rich history of the planet Manan. Manan is located in the Pierschak system and is a planet entirely covered by water, except I would assume where it was covered by sea ice at the poles. It is home to the Selkath, who, fortunately for them, are amphibious. The history of civilized Manan extends far back before the Republic or the Empire, back to the glorious days of the Infinite Empire itself. During this time, Manan was invaded and conquered by the Rakata, who enslaved the Selkath, shipping them all over the Empire to construct great works including temples and the Star Forge itself. Manan was a highly valued world to the Rakata and the galaxy at large, as it was the only source of Colto, a miraculous healing substance for organics. those Selkath left on Manann were also enslaved and used in the collection of the precious Kolto. Once the Infinite Empire collapsed, many of those Selkath that had been scattered across the cosmos returned home and began rebuilding their civilization. It did not take them long to realize the value of Kolto to off-worlders, however, and they soon set about building a floating trading center above the surface of their ocean in order to better trade and sell their soul export. The trading hub rapidly grew into what we now know as Arto City, which would remain the only dry land on the entire planet. The Kolto itself occurred naturally as deposits deep in the ocean floor and could be harvested as it broke free and floated towards the surface. Chasms such as the Harakht Rift exposed those deposits, making extraction easier for the Selkath. The rift is also noteworthy as it is the site of the only Rakatan artifact that was left on the planet, an incomplete star map located on the chasm's floor. Similar star maps are also known to exist on Kashyyyk, Dantooine, Korriban, and Tatooine. Combining that information allowed Revan to discover the Starforge, but I digress. Where was I? Oh yes, Kolto. When the broader galaxy rediscovered Manann sometime around 20,000 BPY, business boomed. The Selkath had a monopoly, and they were not afraid to take advantage of it. Remaining neutral during every conflict, they maximized their profits by selling to both sides. After all, the benefit of selling a miracle cure is that wars can go on longer, allowing you to sell more product. By the time of the Jedi Civil War, Manann was one of the most important worlds in the galaxy. Arto City had grown to such a size it could be seen from orbit. Kolto itself was Manann's one and only export. Their entire economy was built on and around it. As such, their neutrality became a matter of extreme importance to them. A complex series of laws evolved to preserve their neutrality and, by extension, their sovereignty and security. Both the Sith and Republic had to comply or risk sanctions from the Selkath. They also made it known that if any invasion occurred, they would destroy the Kolto supply entirely. Such is diplomacy that such niceties were always observed, on the surface at least, if you'll forgive the pun. In reality, the Sith and Republic were always looking for ways to get an advantage. For the most part, though, the status quo held. Aside from a secret Republic Kolto harvesting operation, which was destroyed, and the Sith's attempt to manipulate a young Force-sensitive named Shasa, who they wanted to use in an attempt to overthrow the Manann government. As the Civil War ended, Arto City gave refuge to many who had been displaced during the conflict. With the influx of newcomers and the still unstable situation in the galaxy, the Selkath established the Order of Shasa, named after the previously mentioned Force-sensitive. The Order comprised of Force-sensitives charged with protecting Manann from invasion. Interestingly, they believed that in order to maintain neutrality, they could no more adhere to Jedi teachings than that of the Sith, so they chose a moderate path between the dark and light, but I digress again. Following the Jedi Civil War, the Selkath continued to exploit Kolto at a steady rate, until, with no apparent reason, the supply began to decline. As stockpiles dropped, the price rose steeply, making the recently developed synthetic agent, Bacta, far more price competitive. Manann dropped the price of Kolto heavily, however, the sudden drop in income led to the collapse of their economy. When the Great Galactic War began in 3681 BBY, Manann tried to maintain its neutrality and sell Kolto to anyone who'd pay for it. The Sith refused to pay anything at all and bombarded all of Selkath's surface cities, including Arto City. All were utterly destroyed, and the Selkath fled to the safety of their deep ocean metropolises. Sometime after the conclusion of the war in 3653 BBY, Arto City was rebuilt and the export of Kolto resumed. While Kolto was, medically speaking, less effective than Bacta, it remained the cheaper alternative, which is one of the other great principles of commerce the Selkath learned. If you can't sell at a premium, sell in volume. Speaking of quantity over quality, back to you, Master David.
There we go. Thanks, Odious One. And so that's the end of Republic news, and let's jump into general gaming news.
This is not the podcast you're looking for.
So we've only got a couple of things on the general game side because we've been more busy in other aspects you'll hear in a little while. But the two that came to mind, first one over to you, Simon, is the Destiny beta has started.
Yes, it began on the 18th Needless to say, the servers fell over and there were all sorts of hiccups, people getting their beta codes. I will say that my beta code problem did not exist. I got my codes without any problem at all, downloaded the 13-odd gig.
Jeez.
I left that overnight. I wasn't waiting up for it. Good God.
No.
And, kickstarted off, and I like the alpha. And I'm enjoying the beta. The alpha was just a vertical slice, so it was just a chunk out of context. I think partly that is why Peter Dinklage got a bit of flack about his voice performance. In all honesty, I think it's very difficult to make a declaration about that wizard comes from the moon, and have anyone be able to deliver that in anything other than what he did.
Yeah.
That is not a line that's really going to resonate with people's real lives.
No.
So, I'm hoping that there's a few lines in there that perhaps they might get him to punch up the dialogue as, I've forgotten his name now. He's a voiceover guy who's been working for years. Hang on, let me just look it up. He did read. He was
Paul Brockman.
No one from the Simpsons.
Kent Brockman. Sorry, I even got that wrong.
Who the hell's Ted Brockman?
No, Kent Brockman.
Oh, Kent.
Yeah, but that was the newsreader in Simpsons, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. It was. Okay, Ren and Stimpy. People are probably yelling. It's Billy something. Billy West. That's it.
Billy West.
Didn't even have to wait for the damn thing to come up. Billy West. He's been doing voice stuff for years. He started off doing Stimpy. And then when John Kay decided he didn't want to do Ren anymore, Billy took over both roles. And you'd be hard-pressed to tell the difference, quite honestly, as to where John Kay stepped out and Billy West stepped up. But as he pointed out, it's all very well getting celebrity actors to come in and do this sort of stuff. But voice acting and acting are two entirely different things.
Yeah.
Because even when you're doing a straight role, you have to punch the performance up a bit over the top.
Yes.
For it actually to read audibly, if that makes sense.
And, well, I mean, we demonstrate that every fortnight here.
Absolutely. I mean, we are pros in this, clearly.
Absolutely.
But anyway, so I'm not going to rag on Dinklage. I think he's done a perfectly fine job with it. So you get to start the game from the beginning. So that's good. You get a bit of the story and it helps pull you in a bit. It is very Halo-esque. There's no getting around that from the music. It's got the same sort of the drum rhythms in there and the choral sections. But I love that music anyway. So the fact that it's echoes that, I have no problem with. The play mechanics themselves are also quite Halo-esque. In a way, if WildStar is WoW 2.0, then I would say in some aspects, Destiny is Halo 2.0. I don't mean Halo 2. I mean they've just taken the concept and all the good things from Halo and they've just bumped it up to the next level.
Good.
And it is a beautiful looking game, even though you're talking about a console, which let's face it, is ludicrously underpowered compared to what you're used to on your PC or most people's PCs.
Yes,
gaming PCs, obviously. When you're sitting on the couch and it's on a 55 inch, 60 inch screen, whatever you've got, it doesn't matter anymore.
No,
I don't really think it matters so much. The playing environment is so different. You're that much further back from the screen. I don't think it matters. And it's a beautiful looking game. The particle effects. Yeah, I'm happy that I pre-ordered it. I'm happy that I managed to somehow get the ghost edition of it as well. So, yeah.
Good. I mean, as I said last fortnight, this is the one that'll probably make me buy a console. So I'm looking forward to seeing it actually out. Because what's have they got an official? There is official release date, isn't there? Because I've seen the stuff plastered all over the game stores.
Yeah, I think is it August or September?
Yeah, it's August or September. I can't remember. I know they got some big promos in EB Games and stuff.
Yeah, PlayStation's getting some exclusives. It's you into the beta early. The Xbox One and 360 codes will be coming out on the between the 23rd and the 25th, I think it is, of this month. So they're not going to be too far behind. I'd be interested to see or hear what sort of reports we hear back. Although they have made quite clear that this is a beta.
Yeah.
It is a beta. It's not a fake beta. It's a beta. So the resolution is not as high as it's going to be in the final release. So it's not up to 1080 and the frame rate's not up there yet. Although, as I say, I can't have noticed.
They could do an Ubisoft and dial back the graphics.
Yeah.
Because we talked about that last episode, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we did. And I don't think they're going to do that.
No, I can't imagine they would.
Bungie are a company that I trust more than most. I've played games from Marathon right on through Halo, and you know they've always done a really nice job. It's not going to be for everyone. Don't get me wrong. This isn't the perfect game by any means, but it's well worth a look at. If only just going on YouTube and watching the Let's Plays. IGN are just absolutely wall to wall with it at the moment, so there's no shortage of that sort of thing.
Good. All right. And speaking of non-perfect games, I can't compare to downloading the 13 gig in this fortnight, or maybe that's because I haven't updated Marvel Heroes in the last fortnight. But
ooh, burn.
But I did, while mucking around on my Wii U, notice that you could download a demo of, it's been out probably 12 months now, Zombie U. So it's one of the early zombie games for the Wii U. Downloaded 1.4 gigs, I think it was, from the Wii Store online. And biggest waste to 1.4 gigs. It's just awful. The graphics are okay, but the interface, I don't even want to start to describe it, but using the Wii controller or the Wii pad, the game pad, whatever it's called, it's just horrific. I can't even begin to say how awful it was. If anyone out there has played it and actually enjoyed it, then please feel free to email us and say that I just didn't give it enough time, but I gave it 20 minutes of trying to use it and just quit in disgust.
Well, I wouldn't worry about it too much because just wait who knows how long it's going to be, maybe another 12 months and just get the Fusion.
Yeah.
Which some reports are indicating might actually be more powerful than the PS4.
Nice. So
that'd be an interesting turn of events. Nintendo's got the most powerful console.
That would be not a first, but it'd be a long time since they've been in that position.
Yeah.
And while we're on Wii, I know Mario Kart 8 is one of two best-selling games in June. The other one being Simon?
Watch Dogs.
Yeah.
Even with all the bad press and the comparatively crappy graphics compared to the ones that Ubisoft lied about, it's doing good business.
Yeah, so they're the two biggies, Mario Kart 8 and Watch Dogs. And I know she put this on, the PS4 is still outselling the Xbox One, which doesn't particularly surprise me.
No. Microsoft have been saying that the sales have been doubling month on month. The only drawback with that is they're not actually saying how many that number. Oh, they're not giving any numbers. So it's, I don't know. It was one, and now it's two, and now it's four, or what? 10?
Yeah,
we're talking hundreds, thousands. What?
Yeah, usually they're not mentioning hundreds of thousands of units. They're covering something up.
Yeah, well, they've been doing this for a while. PlayStation's consistently been talking about their sales numbers have been sell through to customers. So in other words, people have been walking out the shop after handing over money with the PlayStation 4. Microsoft have been for many months now, only when they were quoting numbers, which they've stopped doing pretty much, they were talking about sales to retailers.
Yeah.
So these things could be sitting on the back shelf in a shop somewhere. So not really apples to apples. Having said that, Microsoft has been a lot more assiduous in providing updates to the system, so refinements and improvements. Some things should have been there in the first place probably, but I find it amusing that in the August update, the Xbox One is going to have the ability to play 3D Blu-ray discs.
Okay.
Which... the PlayStation 4 does not have, despite the fact Sony actually came up with the format in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the PS4 can play Blu-ray, but not 3D Blu-ray. And there's been no announcement as to when that feature will come in. So the PS4s, I can't help feeling like the Sony's sort of sitting back thinking, yeah, we really don't need to push ourselves.
No.
Whereas Microsoft are pushing themselves. They know they've got ground to make up. And in some ways, that's actually making them actually feel a bit more responsive.
Yes. Which is going to be a good thing.
Yeah, actually, just while we're on that, oh, shit, sorry, David. I think that was something we were going to
cover a bit. No, that's right. No, we're leaving it in.
Oh, are we? Oh, okay, fine. all right.
We're doing a Torahcast edition.
All right. Maybe we should just pause for a moment.
Oh, okay. All right.
The John Road Memorial Silence. You're not being silent, David. Sorry. Shut up. Shut up.
You realise we don't actually need to pause because I can physically add the pause in.
Oh, why didn't you just tell me that? God.
Oh, I hope you enjoyed that last minute.
Yeah,
dedicated listeners.
That was... anyway, moving on.
Have I made your leisure track? So we're done.
No. I've decided that point sort of overlaps into something that's coming up in a later section. Right, so cool. I thought we'll talk about that later.
So that's general gaming done then. So while we're totally disorganized, let's jump into pop culture.
I can feel your anger growing.
So first cab off the rank in pop culture, I thought Guardians of the Galaxy is out in a matter of a couple of weeks. I love how I don't do my research and tell you the exact date, but it's soon. There's been a few trailers come out now, a lot of hype building around it. I have to say this is probably the Marvel movie I'm least excited about, just purely because I was never a big Guardians of the Galaxy fan in the comics. They were never a big thing for Marvel anyway. They're always a side team that appeared here and there in compilations and the odd other issue.
I felt the same.
Yeah. But that said, the trailers look bloody good.
The trailer has made me excited. It's a while since I've actually let myself get sucked into trailer hype. But this has successfully done it. And it's a good cast.
Yes, that's what helps too.
Definitely. I mean, if anyone used to, and I'm one of them, so I'm not judging, if you watch the WWF, latterly the WWE, I still don't feel comfortable about that change, bloody panda huggers. Dave Bautista is going to be Drax the Destroyer. Chris Pratt, who you'll recognize his voice because he was Emmett in the Lego movie, is going to be Star-Lord. Bradley Cooper, I think, is an interesting choice for Rocket Raccoon, but that kind of kicks ass. And Gamora is Zoe Saldana. Now, that's Uhura from Star Trek, or, again, you'll know her voice as Neytiri from Avatar. Groot is going to be Vin Diesel, and just a little bit of you can have a bit of a fanboy squee over this. Karen Gillan is going to be Nebula.
Okay, you know, see, that's cool.
That's Amy Pond from Doctor Who. So need I say more?
No, you needn't. That's brilliant.
So, yeah.
Yeah, bring it on. And, I mean, I go and see everyone because I am a Marvel fan. B, I want to see where Stan Lee makes his cameo, although I need to re-watch the Marvel movie I saw a few weeks back that's totally skipped my mind. What's the most recent? Oh, X-Men, Days of Future Past.
Oh, yes.
I didn't spot...
But that's a different... That's a held by a different studio, so that's
why
the
thematic feels so different. Yeah, it is, but I didn't
see Stan Lee.
So apparently he was on there as a cameo, but I didn't spot him. So if anyone has watched it, I would love to know via Twitter or wherever where he appears, because I need to buy the movie and find him again, because I was very disappointed. I was watching like a hawk, but obviously not that good of a hawk.
His Winter Soldier one was good. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I've forgotten what I remember.
He was the security guard.
That's right, he was too.
Yeah.
And while we're on Marvel Heroes, related to that is the past week in Comic Land's been a bit of a big one, in that Marvel is one of the big two in a never-ending battle with their competitor to try and out-hype each other, have announced two things, although both of these are positive. Number one, that Captain America, in a, I think it's called, it's an all-new issue, one of Captain America in September, October, will be now, the costume will now be inhabited by the Falcon. And he, oh, I've forgotten his name. Sam Wilson, yeah, that's right. So Sam Wilson, a.k.a. the Falcon, who you would have seen in the Winter Soldier movie, will be actually becoming Captain America, because Steve Rogers is essentially too old to do it anymore, and he'll be mentoring Sam Wilson through getting to know how to be Captain America, how to throw his shield, all that sort of stuff. So that actually sounds semi-interesting for Marvel.
Rogers lost his powers, I think.
Okay, just one other. Yeah, I haven't been buying Captain America. I just believe that, yeah, there was an age issue in there, which probably relates to the powers anyway.
Yeah, probably, yes. Good. There's a good chance.
Who knows? I mean, that's where I've lost faith in Marvel to a large extent, because they just do everything they can to sell issues and stuff the continuity.
Well, it's just a constant reset, isn't it?
Yeah,
it seems
exactly.
To be. I mean, he's not the only Avenger who's getting a restart.
No, so that's the second part. Roll into it, Simon. So Thor's having a slight tweak.
Yes. Thor is now a woman.
Yes. And I must admit, as much as I'd read up on the Captain America, I've seen the headlines everywhere about Thor now being a woman, but haven't read if anyone knows what the storyline is, how it occurs, or whether it's all to be revealed. But
The reason why she's Thor is apparently a bit of a – it's a surprise to come. That hasn't been revealed yet.
Right.
But it's been made quite clear that this is not She-Thor or Lady Thor or Thorina. This is – the Thor of the Marvel Universe.
Good. I mean, there definitely needs to be more upfront female heroes, and this is one way of doing it, I suppose.
That wasn't a boob joke, was it?
No.
Good.
No.
Because that would be tacky.
It would be.
Yeah.
You're just giving me a beautiful segue into the next thing, or the two things after about tacky, and that's Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about that.
So Weird Al Yankovic, I'm sure if there's any listener on here that doesn't know Weird Al, then jump on YouTube, but Weird Al has a new album out called Mandatory Fun, and to celebrate, he's had 8 videos made for 8 of the songs on the album and is releasing them in 8 consecutive days. So today, or this morning at time of recording on Sunday, was day 6, so by the time you listen to this, it'll probably be just about to wrap up. And one of those songs is a cover of Pharrell Williams's Happy, and it's called Tacky, and it's probably one of the better of the 8. Some really good stuff on there. I'd argue of the 6, 4 of them are very strong. The other 2 aren't bad. And he's been very canny with how he's doing it. So each video has been released on a major website. So he's done everything from Yahoo to Nerdist to Pop Crush to you name it. Every day it's someone else gets the exclusive. He's been very smart about it, getting the maximum audience viewing this stuff. So I'll link to Weird Al's main website, and they're all on there. You can access them from there anyway. Have you seen any of them, Simon?
I have seen a couple. The one I enjoyed most, and that's probably because I'm a bit of a pedant, and for all you pedants out there, I strongly recommend watching the takeoff of Blurred Lines, which is called Word Crimes.
And it's brilliant.
There's probably a lot of people you may want to send a link to that video so they stop doing the things that they do.
Yeah, that probably is the best of the 6 I've seen. And I put Tacky second. The First World Problems one today is not bad. It's an original song and it's not bad. But yeah, agree, Word Crimes. So Weird Al.
Yeah, and this is going to be his last album. Not because he's going to stop making music, but because albums take too long to produce. Their gestation and the production and release, it just takes too long. So from now on, he's just going to release singles.
Yes.
So he can get things out faster while the songs are actually in the public mind,
right,
rather than, well, I mean, arguably Blurred Lines isn't going anywhere. anytime soon, but yes.
Allows him to compete with the reams of amateur parodies out there, some of which are brilliant. So, yeah, allows him to compete on a on that basis of getting stuff out there sooner rather than later. And I, it's a sideline. If he comes out to Australia again, I was talked into the tour before last, going to see him, was very ambivalent, went and saw him. He was absolutely superb live. He's got the best band around him. They're a very top-notch rock act on their own, let alone the fact he's funny as hell. So can't recommend it highly enough. So that'll do for pop culture. Let's jump into the last segment, which is our tech roundup for the fortnight.
It does have its moments. Not many, but it has them.
We've got three things this fortnight. Number one being that Microsoft has gone through its business with a flamethrower, mostly on the Nokia side of things, and have fired or retrenched around 18,000 people, Simon.
Yes, 18,000 people. So obviously our thoughts and best wishes go out to them and their families, because it's a shitty thing to happen. 12,000 of those reportedly come from the recently acquired Nokia. So that's nice. There's probably something to do with, as a sideline, Microsoft has recently made clear that Nokia is getting out of the feature phone market, which is kind of odd because Nokia's been able to, and Samsung still do, get quite a good chunk of income from the feature phone market, because those sorts of phones are, like the Asher and similar sorts of phones, are popular in the developing world and emerging markets.
Yeah.
But they basically seem to be just walking away from that. So all of Nokia's networking, basically that's throwing money away, because that's goodwill and brand recognition. Yeah. That they're just going, nah, we're not interested. So they're clearly going to focus on making a push on the Windows Phone, which is fine, because I like Windows Phone. I think it's actually a good platform, apart from the fact that nobody writes apps for the bloody thing. But it's easy to use, especially after they finally get the new update out. But unless they're going to be making something that's going to fill that gap and producing a Windows phone that you can get for, you know, under $150, basically, preferably under $100, then, yeah, they're just abandoning a massive market. Yeah. I mean, walking away from India. What the hell?
Yeah, exactly.
Really? So that's interesting. Of the balance of the 6,000 people, most of those are Microsoft people, including the YouTuber Barnacles. If any of you have ever watched him, if you haven't, you might want to go and subscribe and help him out with a few watches and a few non-ad blocked views of his videos, please. The other people probably are just coming from attrition, and also the fact that they're closing down Xbox Studios, which was announced at the, not the last E3, but the one before, the big TV, football, TV. It's not going to affect the Quantum Break series, which was a series that's going to accompany the game. It's not affecting any of the Halo TV stuff either, or the Signal to Noise, I think it was called, which is a documentary series, and part of that is going to cover the ET cartridges that they found in the dug out of the New Mexico desert. So that's a documentary that I think it may have been a series. I don't know if the series is ongoing, but that documentary is definitely still coming out. But yeah, whatever production infrastructure they had set up for Xbox Studios is gone, and all the people who were employed to do that stuff. So that's a bit of an unfortunate thing, although probably not really a surprise considering how far they've walked back from the whole entertainment side of things.
Mm. Yeah, still sad, but yeah, agreed. Yeah. Metal 3D printing is now a thing. So we've gone from, if you walk in any Officeworks store now, you see the plastic 3D printing stuff displayed prominently. We're up to metal.
We are up to metal, yeah. A company called Matterfab is trying to bring an affordable metal 3D printer to market and make it an order of magnitude cheaper, is what they're saying. So, yeah, if you've ever gone onto YouTube and seen the very entertaining, I find them entertaining, videos of people designing through CAD and then manufacturing basically polymer firearms.
Yeah.
It's always been the part of the firing mechanism that's always been a bit of a challenge because it doesn't tend to last more than half a dozen shots, basically. So, hey, problem solved, guys. Yeah, so that's yeah. immediately where my mind went with it.
I thought, absolutely.
Yeah, that's going to be fine. But hey, you'd be able to make someone a nice alloy wedding ring and then take it round to your friend and get it gold plated and then make out that it costs a lot to someone.
I like your thinking, yeah.
But, I mean, let's just face it, depending on what it works in the same principle. Instead of a plastic powder or a polymer powder, it's a metal powder.
Yeah.
A high-powered laser melts that powder in precise locations. So it's the same mechanism, it's just a different medium being used.
Yeah, that's right.
And, well, I mean, God, the mind just boggles as to what you can do with that.
Oh, it's scary. Even as a geek that likes this stuff, it's a bit scary. That was a very deep sigh.
It was.
All right, well, there's our tech roundup for this episode. We might wrap it there, I think, because we've had Odious One and we've had quite a show. So, as always, oh, no, you've got to remind me, Simon, iTunes shout-outs. I've got them right here. So I do want to, and I apologise for the delay. We've had 3 very nice reviews on iTunes since the 2nd of June. One from Jason, who I'm choosing not to believe is the wonderful Jason from Utini Cast. Positive, entertaining, and sometimes accidentally informative is the title of the review, which sums up the podcast bloody nicely, if you ask me.
Yeah, it sort of encapsulates it quite well. Yeah.
And he's written, first, Barry, with all too many podcasts for me is audio quality. These guys are pretty solid there. Then there's attitude. Simon and David are a pleasure to listen to in that respect. Somewhere further down the list for me is content. But again, these guys are generally well-informed and give a good overview of SWTOR and touch on other games in the genre. So thank you, Jason. The next one on 18th of June was from Sihuwa, so S-I-H-U-W-A. I started listening to these guys due to them having a podcast about SWTOR and continued listening long after I've left SWTOR behind. Incredibly entertaining and quite informative on numerous games, whilst never proclaiming to be experts. That's for damn sure.
Oh, yeah.
Refreshing and fun. Dave and Simon, please continue the podcast in one form or another, as you'll definitely have more than a couple of people listening in. Thanks for everything so far. So thank you, sir or madam. And then Benjamin McJanet, who I know is a regular listener of ours, he said, can't recommend enough. I've been listening to this podcast since before launch of SWTOR. I can only say it's like a fine wine. It's gotten better with age as it is expanded. Well, I think you and I have expanded a bit.
Yeah, well, there's reasonable recent photographic evidence would suggest that's the case, yes.
And it's expanded itself to incorporate much more than just Star Wars coverage. Looking forward to seeing what's next for Simon and Dave and whoever else joins them in the future. Which reminds me, as promised, we will have guest hosts and we hope to have someone next episode, if not the one after. So I'll keep you up to date. So thank you, Benjamin, and the other two for your kind reviews.
Yes, thank you very much. And also I'd like to have a quick shout out to Jason and Annie who were down here for the whiz. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm sure you did. And your nipples didn't freeze off, which it has been quite chilly here, at least it wasn't raining.
No, there is that. So, yeah, no, it was good. It was great that you guys caught up. So, yeah, as always, we love to hear from you. Please email us at contact@oceanicgamer.com or visit our Facebook page, The Oceanic Gamer. My Twitter handle or the podcast Twitter handle is The Oceanic Gamer and Simon tweets under RPG Beats RL.
Correct.
And ODS1 tweets under, I know I've got it in the actual show notes, it's ODS1.
I don't know. I don't follow
it. Yeah, that's right. It's in the show notes. It's in the show notes anyway. You'll find previous episodes of the show, obviously, on iTunes, as we've just read out some reviews, and we're also on Stitcher, which apparently is growing and growing, so that's good. I read that during the week. Stitcher's going great guns. Thanks very much for listening, and thank you, Simon, as always.
Oh, thank you, and thanks, everyone. Thanks for your time.
And have a great week, and remember, if your pub wipes, it's probably because one of us was in it. Good night.
Bye.
Podcast or the person that listens to it?